Hey everyone, Nick McCarville here on Tennis Serve Fresh. We're coming at you Tuesday after the US Open, just less than 24 hours after Rafael Nadal captured his first US Open, his ninth career Grand Slam. And I'm joined today by Erwin Ong from the West Coast. What up, Erwin?
Hey, crazy final, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was very like Selis, Graf, Wimbledon 1992.
Right, and I wasn't expecting there to be rain. I mean, you know, it happened over Sunday too, but I was expecting that their final would be just uninterrupted, just power tennis.
Right.
And again, much like that Wimbledon final with Roger and Rafa, I had made plans that sort of just abutted that final, so I didn't get to see the last two sets.
So did you forego your plans last night or not so much?
Oh, no. I had plans.
Yeah, this wasn't quite Wimbledon 2008.
No. I'm sorry?
This wasn't quite Wimbledon 2008.
Oh, okay. Well, they were playing really well those first two sets, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I thought
the games weren't going, you know, Novak just weren't winning the games.
Yeah, I mean, I think Novak fell off a little bit in the third set, and you know, I think a big disappointment for him in that second set, he was up 4-1, and then it was 4-4 when the rain came, and so he probably felt like he should have had that second set in the bag and the momentum when the rain came. And sure, he won that second set, and they were talking about on TV, oh my gosh, maybe Djokovic can actually pull this off, but it did really seem like he ran out of gas to me.
So it was getting tired still, even after all that rest.
I think so, a little bit. I mean, and Luke Jensen, who was doing on usopen.org from their live stream, he kept calling Rafael the anaconda for squeezing his opponent, which I actually think is a pretty good analogy in the sense that, you know, Rafa can wear you down like no other player can, and things kind of came together for him this US Open that hadn't in the past.
Right, with his serve and just which helped keep him off the court as much as possible, which also helped his knees, which I'm sure led to this title.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of balls, you know, literally and figuratively bounced his way. You look at now the last three majors, and it's great that he's won them, but a lot of people put an asterisk next to Roger Federer's 2009 French Open title when it was, you know, that 15th major, and, you know, he didn't have to beat, or sorry, 14th major, and he didn't have to beat Rafa to win the French. Well, Rafa has now won three slams in a row and hasn't had to beat Roger.
Right, but now I wonder if there's an asterisk next to this US Open because Rafa didn't have to beat Roger. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, that's the point I was making, no. is that this is now Rafa's third slam in a row where he hasn't had to face Federer.
Right. Well, at some point, they'll both end up in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, certainly. Here's the question, though. Do you think that Rafa Novak, do you think that rivalry replaces the Rafa-Federer rivalry?
If they keep on playing the way they're playing, yeah, they're both around the same age, right? And Novak seems to have, he's still pretty consistent. He's been up there with those two for a little while now. And their games seem to match up that way.
Yeah.
I think one of the stats that they were listing last night that before this US Open final, Novak was leading their head-to-head on hard courts, right?
Yeah, well, and he had won their last three matches, too.
Yeah. So it could be, but it also could be Rafa turning into a Roger where he's just going to run over everyone and there won't be.
Rivalry. Definitely. Well, we talked about the men a little bit, but let's talk about kind of the tournament as a whole. It was a great 15 days, the tournament, you know, spilled over into that extra Monday. If people don't remember, there was lots of rain happening in the qualifying. They had to squish that in the last couple days before the main draw began. And then, obviously, with the tropical storm, which never really developed on the East Coast, but there was still a lot of wind. There was lots of talk of the windy conditions.
Right.
But maybe for
and
you...
the heat in the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, totally. It was so hot. New York is abysmal in that heat. Erwin, you were out on the grounds for the first few days and got to be here for a lot of qualifying. Maybe your thoughts on being out there, the tournament as a whole, what did you kind of take from this year's Open?
Well, I really just wasn't expecting to be that heat to... I wasn't expecting it. Normally, I'm pretty good about tolerating that, but it did make watching those matches for those first 2 days a little uncomfortable.
Right.
Fortunately for me, as some of you may know, my focus is really just looking at what the athletes are wearing and how they're playing in it. So it was easy for me to just drop in on a court every once in a while just to watch a couple of games or so and then move on to something else. But that being said, I did sit in on a couple of matches. I watched the Melzer-Tursunov first round match, mm-hmm. which I think went to I think it went to five.
Yeah,
it was either four or five sets.
It was five. I think you're right.
Yeah, and then a bit of the Gasquet match mm-hmm. as well in this first round. So I did sit in for a couple, but for the most part, I had a good time. So I for this qualifying in the first 2 days and the rest of it, I just watched the comfort of my Los Angeles home. You know, wind-free, heat-free, rain-free.
Element-free.
It's nice to mention the coverage, both from Tennis Channel and ESPN were great.
Yeah, you know, I grew up watching tennis a lot on TV and have done so less now because I really haven't owned a TV in the last 7 years. But how is Tennis Channel? How's the coverage? And from your point of view with, I think Justin Gilmestab does a lot of kind of the U.S. Open ground stuff. How does he do? And I always like to make fun of him for some reason, but he seems like he does a pretty good job, right?
Right. Well, to be honest, I only... And I should mention CBS, too, of course, is doing stuff over the weekends. I was catching more of the commentary. They would do sort of a wrap-up program at the end of the day. Lindsay Davenport was... the commentators, and she seems like she knows what she's talking about.
She's great, isn't she?
Yeah. Like she grew up on this stuff. She's won, you know. Obviously, she won at that tournament, and she. I was surprised, at how well she sort of transitioned.
Yeah, and she got a makeover, didn't she?
I'm a little concerned about her forehead. I'm not sure if she got Botox done or not.
Oh, no, really?
Maybe it's just makeup. I don't know.
Maybe you should at reply L Davenport 76 and ask her.
I'll do that tomorrow. See what she says.
Well, so maybe we'll swing over into the fashion you were talking about, swinging through the courts. And was Nadia Petrova the best dress of the 2010 U.S. Open?
Unfortunately. So that was one of the things I was cursing the heat about, is that I just could not stand to stay and watch Petrova play. She played in the evening, I believe, on...
Mm-hmm.
Closer to the evening on the second day?
Yeah, I think second day.
Her and Bethany Mattek were both playing at the end of the second day, and I just couldn't stand to stay. But that was a pretty intense dress, wasn't it?
Yeah, we'll link to that if you don't know what we're talking about. It'll be underneath this.
It'll get up to it'll be up on TSF sometime this week. But there weren't really any sort of really crazy dresses. I mean, you know, everyone was talking about Venus and how she was debuting it, pretty much a dress for every match that she played. Some people thought that the fireworks theme, the ones that she wore, would have been for the
evening.
That, like the fourth round in the
quarters. Yeah.
So it was it was really glittery, and some people were saying, "Oh, would that, you know, is that considered distracting for the other players?" I thought it was fine. Maria Sharapova did that a couple of years ago. She had some crystals on a dress she wore for a net match, and no one complained then.
Wait, I thought the confusion from Venus was that the distraction discussion wasn't about the fireworks, but more about how she was literally pulling her dress over her underwear every point.
But she's done that for other events too. She did that at Wimbledon a couple years ago for a dress that she wore. It's just her frame, and she likes her dresses short.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Rafa does, you know, tugs on his underwear. I guess if players find that distracting, then it would be a fine argument to make that Venus's dress tugging is distracting, too.
I actually really liked the Venus, the firework. It was kind of like a peachy pink, almost, with the glitter. Yeah. And yeah. But I really did start to... I usually don't care. Like, the girls can grunt, they can scream at each other, like, they can do whatever. I don't care. But Venus pulling... And Wozniacki, too, pulling their dresses over their butt every time. It just seemed like it was almost distracting them. And it's like, you know, you want to see, especially from the WTA that has sort of this lack of quality the past couple years, Venus and Caroline are these great players. Like, why is, should, I mean, I love Venus and what she's done for the game, but why? I just don't get it.
You know, I'm sure of this, that they, with how much is at stake, they have a say in being able to tailor the clothes that they wear on the court to how they want it. And, you know, and they've been hitting with these in these dresses to make sure that they are that they're comfortable in them,
right,
that they can hit the level that they want to play. So it's not unheard of to have something customized for a specific player, so I'm thinking that they're just fine with it.
Yeah. Well, Erwin...
Yeah, it is distracting, especially with those lime green underpants that Wozniacki was wearing.
When you get your big Venus interview, I want you to ask her. No, I really do. I want you to ask her what the process is of, you know, when she, way back when she was wearing Reebok or for any other player, they get the dress and its size, and, you know, is it tailored? Does she go out and hit in it? Like, what's the actual... Or is she in her bedroom? She's just, like, looking in the mirror a couple angles, and then she's like, great, this looks good. Let's go, you know. Come on, Serena. Let's go practice.
Right.
I want to know what that process is. Because for the men, it's like, okay, these, you know, shorts are, you know, a foot past my knees. I'm set. Let's go.
Right.
So it was nice to see as much as... a lot of people were not necessarily digging the artwork on Djokovic's back. What was that? A dragon or a snake?
It was a dragon. Was, yeah, a dragon. So he'd been wearing sort of wings, like falcon wings, which is you know, this theme that he carried over from his Adidas line. But he switched over to a dragon that was on his cap, and it was crawling through his back. And then also on down his right leg, so it appeared in three different forms.
I just thought, you know, for Federer, Djokovic, and Rafael Nadal, they're just all, their clothes just look so good on them on the court. I think it's a job well done to whoever is in charge of that part of them.
Yeah, I was a little skeptical about this whole... Novak thing, because the graphic print, it just seemed really like, what's the word, like juvenile.
It is kind of juvenile. It's a little like seventh grade, like, I want to be a skateboarder, dude.
Yeah, it's like something I would be sketching in my binder because I'm bored.
But I got to see Novak play twice live, and the fit of those outfits were great, and so, you know, maybe the design needs a little improvement or change, but it's also nice to see two guys on opposite sides of the court wearing two different things compared to, you know, where we've seen Adidas or Nike or whatever, and it's like, oh wait, is that who is which, you know, because they're wearing the exact same pieces.
Right. Yes, and Rafa's stuff was pretty good in that U.S. Open feed from last night. Jensen was talking about the three different pairs of shoes that Rafa had. Huh. He had a day shoe that was mostly, I think it was mostly black with a little neon green. And then he switched the colorways around for the night match. But he also had a glow-in-the-dark pair, which doesn't really work because, you know, the lights stay on. But right. I guess it's just the novelty of it.
Well, and for part of that final yesterday, I was at Arthur Ashe, and we were sitting pretty far up in the promenade, and Nadal just looked so cool out on court because his Babolat racket almost matched his outfit, too. Right. And
I wonder if he went as far as coordinating that. I'm going to put my money on no, but
I don't know.
It all just comes together for him. So
yeah, my friend Jessica was saying that he looked like the bad guy. Like, it was kind of this cool sort of Gotham battle between the two of them. And, you know, the skies were... This was before the rain delay, and the skies were darkening. It was fun to watch before the rain actually came.
Yeah, he looked really good. And I did prefer that black... that his night match outfit over with the wearing during the day. But for the rest of the players, it was pretty, you know, par for the course. Dementieva, too bad she took loss earlier than I would have wanted. Wearing a red Yonex dress, which they eventually put up on sale at their booth there on the ground. James La Rosa was not impressed by it, but I thought it was a wonderful red dress. Same cut that she's been wearing this whole time.
I do have to say, though, if people have never seen Dementieva, and I think this also goes for Yankovic, if you've never seen them in person or play in person, those dresses fit them so well. And they, especially on Dementieva, it just shows what an athlete she is. And, you know, she's just, the cut is, you know, that is a dress you can tell is tailor-made. And sure, it's Yonex, so it's not necessarily going to be maybe this, like, Stella McCartney, you know, all these sort of design things happening with it. But it's a great tennis dress, fits her well, she looks amazing. And, like you said, and I'm sure, you know, for Dana Mason and for all these people selling, people want to buy that dress. You know, women want to wear that kind of stuff that then they can feel good in too, instead of like tugging bright pink fireworks over their butt every 5 seconds.
Right. What was I going to say? Oh, you brought up Yankovic. Yankovic had a really nice dress too.
She looked so good.
Which she'd actually worn for the last couple of North America tournaments, but then she added that purple sports bra and the hot pants underneath, and it just worked. Same with Udan, who was wearing the purple Adidas. I think it's the Barricade series. Everyone who wore purple looked really good. Sharapova's evening dress was also purple, and I'll be posting that up as well.
So was purple the color this year? What is that? Is that
Mike Collins was wearing purple. I was there on the grounds, and he was just wandering the
grounds, down
courts in purple pants, purple shirt.
Yeah.
I think there might have even been a purple hat, but I don't remember. That was definitely the color. Even Mirjana Lucic was wearing purple.
I watched Lucic twice, you know, two matches, once against Yankovic, and I got to talk to her a little bit, but oof, her outfit was a rough piece of work. Just didn't fit her well. It just made her look straight out of 1997.
Yeah, it washed her out too. She's sort of a pale girl. But,
she's gorgeous though.
Yeah, and two snaps, right, for making it the main draw.
Yeah, she won four matches, and she said she's going to be in Quebec City, which I'm not quite sure is this week or next week. So, yeah, I mean, I think you look at these players like Dakic or Lucic or these girls who are trying to make comebacks, and it's a big deal for Lucic, and she probably wants to keep it rolling. But maybe for you to keep it rolling, Erwin, a couple last thoughts on the fashion. Any worse dressed? I mean, we've already talked about Nadia, but anybody else that caught an eye from you on a negative way?
I was really expecting something horrible to come out of, say, like Radek Stepanek, or one of those standbys. But everyone was dressed pretty well. So, yeah. Congratulations, everyone. And as I said earlier, I haven't put up a lot of the pictures, a lot of the images of what the players are wearing, and I'll be doing that throughout this coming week.
Yeah.
So look out for it.
Okay. Well, we're about to wrap up. I want to close with just one question for you, Erwin, and then I'll give my answer as well. But last podcast, a couple weeks ago, David Thorpe joined me out on the grounds, and we were talking about our favorite sort of U.S. Open moments. And for David, it was day four. He just was saying how great Thursday of week one is at the U.S. Open. Is there one thing, whether it's a time or a court or a feel or you know, the Grey Goose standing, you know, booth that you hit up between every match? What's kind of the one thing that you love about Flushing Meadows and the Open?
Well, for me, so I've been there twice now, or mm-hmm. for two different years. It's really when the 7 train pulls into...
Really?
Yeah, the station.
Yeah.
And I get sort of just giddy every time. And I haven't quite figured out which car to get into, so that I'm the first one out. You were with me that one day when you magically just inserted...
That wasn't magic. That was pure skill. That was me knowing exactly which door to stand at.
Okay, so I want to get to that point. But I think that's just really fun. And you know, everyone gets excited for the people who are more casual tennis fans. You know, I just see everyone's eyes sort of light up as you make that sort of turn into that stop. And I like that there's a separate, you know, the subway conductor like calls it out and says, if you're here for the tennis,
right,
you know, your door's open first. Like, I like that they even bring that up.
Right.
It just makes it that much more special.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I rode the 7 train to and from Flushing Meadows maybe 10 times, not a ton compared to others who went out there, you know, maybe every day, but it's so fun, and to hear people and see people wearing Federer gear and that kind of stuff, if you ever come out to the Open, it's certainly worth just maybe the extra hour in your day to experience the 7 train from Grand Central, and it's certainly a fun experience.
Yes. And, oh, it is better than... I took the shuttle one day from Midtown, and it's a different experience because you're riding it with like players sometimes, journalists, a lot of the chair umpires ride it. What's his name? Enric Molina.
What about my BFF Lynn Welch?
I did not see Lynn.
Oh, she gets her own.
She was already on the ground.
She gets her own car.
Yeah,
She sleeps on court 7. Oh.
But the train, I think, is still a better experience. It's certainly more consistent time-wise. You know, you don't have to worry about traffic on the interstate.
Agreed. All hail public transportation.
Exactly.
All right, well, also all hail the 2010 U.S. Open. It's complete. We didn't even get to really talk about Kim Clijsters and her enthralling 6-2, 6-1 victory over Zvonareva in the final. But this podcast is now 24 minutes long, which is almost as long as that match. So we better sign off here. Erwin, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome, Nick.
All right, well, we'll be back with you guys soon, sometime this fall. And for all your latest tennis, fashion, arts, and culture, Tennis Serve Fresh is your place. And we'll talk to you soon.